the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is February 6th, 2018. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here in Eugene, Oregon, and we actually have blue skies outside. Yippee! So thank you for joining us. I want to remind you that you can only find UCY.TV on the internet. You have to type in, if you're finding us, www.ucy.tv/AOF. That's the Age of Vision. You can also find our podcasts that go up within the hour after the show ends, about 10 o'clock every morning. If they're a live show on UCY TV on their channel on YouTube, you can find the podcast there or on the website. So thanks for joining us. This morning, I'm excited to have back with us a friend of mine, a woman that I'm proud to call my friend, Mimi Gurman. We became friends in No Nukes Northwest. But she has been working on an issue that is unspoken in this country. We all pass it by every single day. And she works with the homeless people, the people that don't have houses. We call them houseless because they have homes. It's in their hearts. So, Mimi, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
And it's in Portland. We're a little overcast up here. I want your blue skies from closer to Eugene.
Yeah, well, you can. I'll give them to you. We can share, but we will have clouds soon because I can see them busily chemtrailing us. You know, they're busy. The geoengineering bots are out there making sure we have clouds by the afternoon. So, look, you have been engaged. You and I met because of my activism after I got woken up because of Fukushima about the Columbia Generating Station. And you live in Portland, and there is an issue that really brings it home much closer than shutting down the long slog of shutting down a Columbia Generating Station. And that is facing the issue of human beings living on the street without basic shelter and basic necessities. And we have a fat government that takes our taxes for sure at least every year. Once a year, somehow we pay some kind of taxes, and they do nothing for the people that are in these dire situations. What have you been doing? I want people to understand how it works. How did you get engaged in it, and what made you decide to, like, zone in on that? I know we talked about it briefly, but let's review that a minute.
Well, you and I, as you were saying, have done a lot of work here in the Northwest on bringing attention to our failing nuclear power plant, and as an aside, all nuclear power plants fail. And that power plant's called the Columbia Generating Station, located also on Hanford's land, but different from the Hanford waste dump. So that is this ongoing catastrophe as well as what we see all the time, every day on our streets here, which is, you know, thousands of people, like you said, trying to survive with nothing. And so my attention started to, you know, just come home here and be local, super local, macroly local, and microly local, just local. And we had last year, at the end of, maybe it was the end of 2016 into 17, we had a terrible winter, and we had people dying on our streets, and the city wasn't doing anything about it, and we were about to have a new mayor coming in, and his name is Ted Wheeler. And he is no friend of the houseless or people trying to survive on the streets, though he ran on his platform for helping to bring in police transparency and to deal with housing the houseless. He's done neither.
Is he Republican or Democrat? Is he a Republican or a Democrat?
He was a Republican, and now he's a Democrat, but his whole being is Republican. You can change your, you know, you can change the checkbox, you know, but you can't change your heart. And what he does and how he acts is as a staunch Republican. So that's the guy who has now, under his control, hundreds of millions of dollars that we actually voted for last year in a bond to use to house the houseless. And that money has not gone to housing the houseless. So in fact,
where's it going?
He was supposed to have, it's sitting, it's mostly sitting. And it's sitting at the joint office under a guy named Mark Jolin, who, you know, maybe using some of that money, I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars. We voted for $258.4 million to be used for housing the houseless and for affordable housing to be built.
Do they have commissions going on? Have they been doing, like, investigating how, are they planning projects maybe?
That money shouldn't be used for commissions to look into what we have. We already know what we have here. So if they're using that money, which I don't think they are, to look into what our problem is, that would be a wrong purpose for that money. That money has been allocated specifically for affordable housing and for housing the houseless. So most of that money has been sat on by the joint office, which is where all things that are houseless issues go to now. Instead of it being just the city, instead of it being just the county, they've triangulated it into this office that this man, Mark Jolin, runs. So one of the things that just happened was there was a building that came up for sale, and it could house about 130 people as a shelter. So the area, the Lentz neighborhood, which is where this empty building is, kind of revolted because the city didn't communicate with them about buying this building, using our money so that it can be used as shelter. So there was this great revolt from the people of Lentz saying, you can't put these people in our neighborhood into a shelter.
Yes,
and these are the same people who call Wheeler's office, the mayor's office, to complain that they have so many people living outside on the streets and under the highways and, you know, so on, and you have to move them, you have to do something. And then when a solution, at least a partial solution, shelter is never a solution, it's a partial solution. As soon as a shelter comes up and happens to be in their neighborhood, they say, not in my backyard. And so we advocates and activists for shelter and for housing, I have to say we won. I have to use the word won because it was a big fight. It was extremely contentious. And we now are buying that building so that we can have people in that empty building. And
awesome.
It's money. Sure, it's money. And people, what people like to do, this was an interesting thing to watch at the Multnomah County board, like this whole meeting happened around this. And they were going to vote to finalize this and lease it out. So at that meeting, people were talking about how outrageous the amount of money would be to buy this building. And nobody, including Mark Dolan, nobody was bringing up the fact that to leave people, that the amount of money that it costs to leave people on the street, to pay for emergency room visits, to pay for the health care of people who are so, you know, who are suffering so badly, that's astronomical amounts of money. So if we take $2 million and we have to buy a shelter because we can get 130 people inside, then let's do that. Let's worry about the other things later. We have tons of money here. You know, we use it for wrong purposes. Mm-hmm. And so that's an example of maybe what, you know, Dolan is doing with some of that money. But I'm talking about $258 million. You know how many apartments could be filled for that money? How many houses? How many tiny homes? How many, let's give it to people who want to put villages up?
Let me ask you this. Do they have an office, a liaison to like develop a program to go out and do the leasing and the housing and the management? Because that's another whole layer of social services to actually get that into effect. Has the city actually gotten a liaison or hired an office and developed an office?
We have the office, and this city has so many liaisons and so much money that's been dumped into communications that is then abused, you know, and the communication never happens anyway. So that's all part of their scam.
We're all set up. But have they developed a plan to use the money? Like, say, okay, you're going to have a social worker. We're going to go out and bring you, like, we're going to go find 10 people a day and try to, that'll be our daily goal. If you get, like, 10 people a day to make contact with, you can probably get one housed a month. I mean, it's not going to be an easy process working with that and through that process and getting them into, you know, like they could go out and find apartment complexes and you just purchase the leases and then fill them with people. It's only four or five, right. Even if it's 10,000 people. And my guess is it's more than 4,000. My guess it's more like 6 to 8 because people avoid censuses.
Yes.
Not talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And they hide out.
The
idea
of avoiding,
visible.
Right? Exactly. So the way that you just framed that is exactly right. You know, and we've been pushing for the city during city council every single Wednesday. We push for our city to actually be the motto of the city, which is the city that works. We tell them what to do. We suggest what to do. We lay out how you would do this. And what I'm speaking about specifically is sending social workers out, sending people out into the areas where there
what do you guys have
multitudes
to
of people in need.
Maybe you just have to go out and do a program where you advertise for independent social workers and say, hey, we're going to work up a program and develop it for the city, and we're going to put your name on the resume so they know who to call. Like, you just go out. It's kind of like asking them to do every single thing. It's almost as if they have these liaisons, but it sounds like grotesque incompetence. They just don't know what to do.
Well, that is probably the case, but we're there. We activists and advocates are there to tell them what to do, and they still say no. So
have you given the phone numbers? I know it sounds
ridiculous. We've done it all.
Really?
We've done it all. Our city says yes to whatever the businesses want, and what the businesses want is no houseless people anywhere near their businesses, and they want more police. And you know what they got? They got more police, and they got the mayor's attention, and they got the okay from the city that their reaction to the suffering of our houseless community on the streets is the correct reaction, which is ask for more cops, we'll give you more cops. Ask for more cops, and we'll not only give you more cops, but we'll create ordinances like don't stop, keep moving, like no sit laws, like exclusionary zones. And what all of these do...
Wait a minute. Are you saying that those are actual laws that are in force in Portland?
Yes.
So slow down on those ones. Like, what's the don't stop law?
Okay, the Don't Stop Law is the new one, and that came about when Ted Boyle, the Columbia Sportswear, he complained that his people at work are unsafe. You know, they feel unsafe because there's houseless people. Oh, my. So he made a statement. This was a few weeks ago. He made a statement that he wants the mayor to do something real about, you know, our houseless problem, because there's ugly people on the street, right? And, oh, they're all dangerous, and, oh, they all commit crime, and, you know, everybody is all the same. And so the mayor said, you're right. We're going to give you more cops walking the beat. And the interesting thing about it, when you go to city council every single week, you can see that it's a checkers game. It's not even a chess game. It's a checkers game. So on the agenda item, this was the week before Boyle's comment came out. The city said, we want more cops to be on the walking beat downtown. And then that was going to get voted on like a week later. In the middle of that, Boyle makes his proclamation that his people are in danger and he needs the city to do something. And he would never have moved headquarters here if he knew how dangerous that houseless community was going to be. So then the following week, boom, city council, and they vote yes for the cops on the walking beat because, oh my, Ted Boyle and, you know, all of these store owners who are complaining about the houseless want more cops, so let's give them that. And what they did, including giving them more cops, is they created the Don't Stop, Keep Moving ordinance, which means that cops on the walking beat downtown, if they see somebody stopped sitting on a bench on the ground anywhere, you know, asking people for money, doing whatever, just existing, just living, the cops can have to tell those people, you need to move on, move along, move along, move along. And then what happens is those people get criminalized for existing if they don't move along because they haven't slept in days, because it's been raining, because it's been like, you know, 25 degrees at night with rain or whatever, they get criminalized and they'll get arrested. So this is the furthering of criminalizing the most vulnerable in order for the wealthiest people, the multimillionaires who own these big companies like Columbia Sportswear and whoever else, they give them what they want. So our city colludes with the wealthiest to make the wealthy all happy, give them what they need, give them police while criminalizing and bringing more suffering to the most vulnerable, which are those living on the street. And that's how this game works. And
it's
before
also,
they don't stop, keep moving.
It's
yeah.
also
we,
a-
go ahead.
Mimi, it's also the very same idea I said in my intro, assets on a balance sheet. Every time you bring a person into the system, the hospital or the prison system, it's cha-ching for somebody. Somebody gets to charge the government mm-hmm. a lot of money. It is using us as assets, using them as assets as on a balance sheet. That is really it. And that is, it is criminalizing. So the city has not found apartment complexes where they can just like buy leases in this whole building. Like there must be open housing that they could get leases going for people.
So let me tell you what we have done. So there's a new build happening over by the Lloyd Center in Northeast. And the plan for that is that it's an affordable housing plan. At least for this one building. And that's what the plan is. Okay. And I have plan like in my, you know, in air quotes, because it's just a plan. And it got ratified. So it's going to go through. They're building this apartment complex. And out of like, I can't remember what the exact numbers is, but the percentages are like this. Out of, let's say it's 100 apartments. Out of 100 apartments, we might get like 13 of those for actual affordable housing. And of the 13, and this, again, I'm making up, this is basically what the percentage is, except it's a higher amount of apartments that's actually going in. So it's slightly higher amount of people, you know, for affordable housing going in. But so who are the people who are going to get the affordable housing? It's supposed to be for, again, houseless people. And for, you know, next to that, it's supposed to be for people who are, you know, domestic violence, women and children, you know, who need safe space and things like that. But will that even happen? Will it be affordable to them? What is their gauge right now on what affordable is? And they do have a statistic on what affordable is, you know, but is that really something that we can work with? And this is the definition. I wanted to read you the definition. So what we need is public housing, you know, and what what the plans are for is affordable housing. So this is what public housing is. Public housing is a class of housing designed as, and this is like this mathematics thing, it's defined as means test. So less than 80% of MFI plus government subsidy, any government type plus rental agreement. The affordable housing is a different construct, which is mortgage, insurance, taxes, utilities, and less than 30% of household income. Every house, condo, and apartment is affordable to someone. And that's the thing. When we look at, we call these things affordable. Affordable to whom? Who are we talking about? We need public housing for the people. And that's what we are not getting. So everything they do,
actually, you know what?
The term affordable housing.
If we had public housing, rents would be more affordable. Part of what happens is, I mean, that's what drives the whole thing is these, not public housing, it's affordable housing drives up the rents. Because affordable housing is these interactions with agencies where they only pay a portion of the rent, so the rent goes higher, so they get a higher percentage.
Right.
So it's a shakedown, right. 100% all the way down the line. So what are you guys doing? What's the plan now that they, why don't you, I mean, you and I are talking about some history that we know because we live on the Northwest, but you guys built this super cool, like little village of a community of tents along a very out of the way portion next to some waterway or the river or something. I could see it in the background, but it was way off the beaten path and it was very discriminately placed so that it didn't just take up one big clump. It didn't look like a little mini city. And they were on platforms. You put these bricks, you got these brick, big, gigantic 4x4 brick blocks and put the wooden platforms on top of the brick blocks so that they could put their tents not on the ground. That was so smart. And the city came and destroyed within a very short period of time. They called it...
So the Village of Hope.
Yes.
So Village of Hope was put together by Lisa Lake, Steve Kimes, and Ibrahim Mubarak. And they're all housing advocates. And they knew so many of the people who were living in these particular woods, which are, just to give people an idea, very far from Portland, very far from housing, any housing. But there are no neighborhoods near here. Just
really?
To give you this idea, there are woods. Yeah, there's some industrial buildings that are right next to it. But where these tents and platforms were, where the village was in the woods. Now these woods are where about, you know, let's just say 40 or 50 people had already been trying to survive on their own. So of those people, the leaders of Village of Hope took, you know, arranged that let's create a safer space for these folks because they're out here on their own. Life is so difficult as it is. Let's try to bring a little bit of structure with, you know, love and the ability to get to appointments by having rides. You know, so that they can get to their medical appointments, so that they can get to whatever it might be, and have food, and have blankets, and make sure that they're safe. So they decided, let's start off with 10 platforms. So that could be the potential housing for 20 people. And the city was sort of... the city sort of knew that something was going to happen anyway. You know, the city has opportunities on so many fronts to do things like this on their own, to include activists, to include advocates and make this happen, but they don't. So these three people went and they did this. They are also from their own nonprofits and churches. And they came together with others from the community who do help out with houseless issues and built these platforms and got them in there and bought the tents and got the blankets and got a kitchen set up, the whole thing. And as soon as it happened, the city put out a statement saying that this is not okay, that this was a unilateral decision that didn't include the city and didn't include nonprofits. And the thing is that the city did know that something was coming. And the thing is that nonprofits did make this possible. Real nonprofits that help people out on the streets and buy stuff directly for the people. And the mayor said, what was his, aside from it being a unilateral, you know, mission that didn't include the city, he was really angry. He said, parks and natural areas are not appropriate places for building homes. Parks belong to everyone, and each has designated purposes established through community processes. We have learned from past experience that even well-intentioned, well-run camps draw other campers to the area, which the organizers cannot control, causing environmental degradation that squanders previous investments in restoration work. And I would like, Lonnie, if you don't mind, I'd like to just totally take apart his statement, starting going backwards. They're talking about restoration work in this area. There were, for starters, in just a few hours, the people who put the Village of Hope together went into the woods and took out over 20 or 30 or 40 bags of trash. All kinds of trash that the city never went in to help with. And yet,
is it actually in a park? Is it in a park that it's built?
It's parks land. It's not a park. It's parks land. So anything that's parks land can be called a park, right?
Okay.
So it's not like a developed
park.
So no, it's not developed at all.
But it does have
some wildlife area.
But the city maintains little pathways through it. The city maintains pathways.
No, they don't maintain anything. There's nothing maintained in there by the city.
Wow. And they're calling it a park.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it is a park, you know, in that it's owned by Parks.
Right. I get
it. So the whole issue about environmental degradation, Elspeth, who was one of the people who took part in the village, making the village happen and documenting a lot of everything that went down, one of the people documenting everything that went down, Elspeth took pictures of the camp going in, of the village going in, and she took pictures of what happened when the village went down. When we put those platforms in and the tents up, there wasn't one tree or one, you know, hedgerow or one, you know, scrub brush that was hurt by us by trampling on it. We left everything exactly as it was, and we managed to put everything in so that it didn't harm any bit of nature. And when they came in, when the rangers came in and the city came in to take the village apart, they came in with Range Rovers and Jeeps.
Wow.
And they rolled in all the way up these paths with these, you know, four-wheel drive. There are ruts. There are... It's a disaster zone now because of what the city did.
Hmm.
And it's all been documented. So their reasoning for taking this down was total, I don't know, am I allowed to curse on your show?
No.
It was total bullshit. Okay, well, I just did. And it, I'm sorry. And it, so
it just won't get played on KVAL. And KEPW can't play it, that's all.
Okay, so the reasoning that they came up with was so wrong. We knew it was wrong. The city knew it wasn't real. And here we have now, you know, the people who were living there, the people who were going to be living there, back out into survival mode again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what our city does.
Why? Because of the owners, for the same reason that there was a place here in Eugene about 10 years ago now, it's 2018, I guess about in 06, 07, and 08, I was involved with a small group of people who proposed to use the armory as a shelter because our city owns it now. And it was a really good use. It had several kitchens. I mean, it holds 150 people. It could sleep 150 people. The neighbors would not hear of it. The neighbors, absolutely. The homeowners, the people who owned the home said, absolutely not. So that building still sits unused to this day. Mm-hmm. While we have people walking down to the river in the winter, making a little hovel next to the river, sleeping in the freezing shelter.
Right.
You know, in the freezing cold in a little made-up shelter.
The statement about that the other villages, you know, couldn't take care of other people wanting to come there, you know, there's never been a takedown of another village. There's been an attempt, you know, but because the people understand the people, and when the people work together with the people, not the cities, I mean, with people, we know how to make these things work.
What did they do with the wooden slats? What did they do? Because you guys built wooden platforms and bricks. Did they haul all that stuff off?
They hauled it all away, and I believe that, I know that yesterday people were able to retrieve their belongings. Well, the ACLU is involved now with this whole takedown of the Village of Hope. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lawsuit is going to happen. There were so many illegal things that went down where you have to give warning to people that you're going to, you know, that they have to leave land. If, you know, this is like kind of the way it works. You have to give warning, and then they have a certain amount of time, like let's just say 24 hours before mm-hmm. another notice can come in. And I believe this is the way it works. And then they come in and they give you the other notice saying you're going to be evicted or something like that. But the way that the law enforcement went about this, the way that the city went about this, there were a lot of things that they did illegally, and so many, in fact, that the ACLU has picked this up. So at some point, I won't be surprised if the ACLU files, and I hope that they file, because, you know, people weren't camping, people weren't destructive, people weren't destroying the land, people weren't doing anything that went down, people were abiding by what was happening, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But we have other villages. We have, you know, we have three other villages that work out just fine. We need more villages. There's many of us in St. John's trying to get a village here in St. John's to get one put up here. You know, I told the mayor too. I said, we need a village in St. John. We need in St. John's. We need shelters in St. John's. I told the county that, you know. When you guys are having
understand why they can't just rent apartments. Why can't they just go rent apartments and then put people in them?
We have so many. We have apartment buildings that were built at the waterfront. They're horrifyingly ugly. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, but they're huge. They're tall, and they are not occupied. So plus, there's open occupancy in so many of the houses that were bank foreclosed. Those are still empty. So there's a lot of things. There's a lot of spaces where we could be housing people and taking care of people.
Why won't
but our
the city look into
clearly
it?
Doesn't want to do that. They do not have heart. Our city does not have heart. Nobody wants a houseless person next to them in a house next to them. Nobody wants a village next to them. And including industry, that's where Village of Hope was.
I mean,
you couldn't see it from the road.
To me, I don't think we need villages. I think we need housing. I think settling for a village is, you know, like there's a small population of the people that are houseless who will prefer to not be in a home. But the real issue is these people need homes, and the city has money. You guys have actually designated the money to be spent to help
That's
them,
right.
And they have not really purchased one lease, one contract. How long does it take to go out and find a contract from somebody who will allow the city to just rent that building? There has to be somewhere, and it's outrageous that they're just winter after winter. Oh, thank goodness we had a mild winter this year. Because it could have been super devastating like it was last year. A baby died in a mother's arms, frozen to death. How harsh is that? In the United States of America, a child died freezing to death on the streets of America.
Yeah, and we just had, there was a couple more people who died who were trying to survive in the woods recently. It's not even been, you know, the media doesn't even care anymore. Or the media is complicit with Wheeler. I don't know which. I have no idea, you know, that they don't want to talk about that because it's going to hurt Wheeler, his reputation, because, oh, my God, this is going to happen again. And, oh, my God, all those crazy people who go to city council to shut it down, to have emergency sessions brought up about this, that whole thing is going to get, you know, redone, you know, take two.
You know, this is the scenario in every major city. This is why we have the situation. At least here in Eugene, the advocates did fight for a place where they have a little, they have a few places where there's actually shelters and tents, and there's mini housing. There's a few different types of housing services here in Eugene. And that I think that, you know, it's been a, in some ways, it's been a decent model. You know, the police aren't completely, I don't think they're completely hideous to the houseless here. Although I don't think they're very kind.
Well, one of the things that does happen here with our villages is that the villages aren't places where people, at least most folks, are there for forever. They're a safe place to be while waiting for another real place, you know, another place to, you know, a house to come through, an apartment to come through. Mm-hmm. So the turnover at many of the villages is really high because people are getting housing, you know, but when I say really high, I don't mean like in high numbers. The numbers of people who are in the villages are very few. So it all, you know, it's all about how many people are we talking about, and we are not housing people here. We're just not. Mm-hmm. And so but these most, villages are necessary because they're safe.
How many people do the villages, you say you have two or three of them, but how many, that doesn't house like 1,000 people, right? That's
No, we have, there's like, 12 to 15 people at the women's village. There's, I don't know how many are at R2D2. If there's, I don't know if there's 30 there, but usually it's around that. You know, it's not more than that. We only have three of them. So it's not, we're not
maybe
even talking 100 people.
Yeah, maybe 100.
No, we're not even talking 100 people.
Out of 4,000, over 4,000 at least people. The rest of them are literally on their own, on the streets, being harassed. Unable
I would like to shed light on what activists are doing, because most of the people I know, at least in person, are activists for the houseless. And here in St. John's, there's a great community that is taking food to the people, hot clothing to the people, tents and tarps and socks and shoes to the people. And there are people who are going out into, you know, different areas doing the same thing. And it's not, there's a, an organization called Free Hot Soup, which is just amazing. And Free Hot Soup goes out weekly to the same space downtown to feed the people. So it's hot food and it's guaranteed and it's there. Maybe it's every night. I can't remember. I'm not in that, and I can't keep track of everything that happens. But so the community itself that cares for the houseless, we are strong and connected, and we have ways of figuring out how to do this. Like in my case, I usually go and get clothing and tents and tarps and, you know, cold foods for people, things that they can just carry around with them, you know, whether it's whatever it might be. But I know who I go to get all those things, because those people are the people who other people know to go to give those things. So instead of having to do everything and get burned out, I call so-and-so and go to her house and do pickups for what I need, load my car up. I know where people are hanging out. I go deliver it to the people. Other people get hot food, and then they bring that around. So we are strong, but the city is doing absolutely nothing. Not only nothing, but they're destructive in their nothingness.
It reminds me.
Because when they feel that they're not included, in the case of Village of Hope, they destroy the Village of Hope. Mm-hmm. But the Village of Hope isn't destroyed. It's gonna reappear. You know, I'm waiting for
your coalition of people reminds me of the Underground Railroad.
I don't like to compare anything to slavery, because slavery is its own thing. And I don't think that, you know, this is its thing. This is houselessness. That's slavery. And as far as, you know, tools for how we do things, yes, we build community to help whatever the thing is, in this case, houselessness. Yeah.
This is an issue that's actually probably not going to get better as the economy begins to fail. I mean, for real. Now that they have to pay for the tax cuts for the rich, they're going to really squeeze the poor. It's going to happen, period. That was part of the plan. And that's why they're so steely-eyed determined not to get rid of Trader Trump, because he can do it. They know he's ruthless enough. So I think we have to gird ourselves for this. So in Portland, are you guys actually making progress with establishing these like villages of hope, and, you know, areas where people who are houseless can maintain themselves until they get into housing?
Well,
are you guys making progress?
The three villages that exist are doing well.
Do you think that the police state knows where they're at? Is that why they're okay?
Oh, they're not touched. The police state totally knows where they're at, okay. But they've been left alone. They've been, I can't say sanctioned, because they haven't been sanctioned. They haven't had the kiss of okay, but they exist, they're here, and they're staying. The women's village, the Kenton Village, was put together by a church, and so because of that, they're left alone too. You know, because the church is dealing with it. The Village of Hope was in part put together by a church, because Steve Kimes has his own church. Mm-hmm. And but that wasn't good enough for the city, you know. Neither was the advocacy of Lisa Lake's work or Ibrahim's work with R2-D2. I mean, these are three very experienced people putting a village together. You can't get more experienced people doing that.
Was
plus
it near
the,
a business?
Advocates who worked with them. No, it was near industry. But look, man, we're not allowed to have houseless people be anywhere. You can't be near homes. You can't be near a neighborhood. You can't be near a school. You can't be near this. You can't be near that. So, okay, fine. We'll go to the woods, right? No, there's industry that nobody goes to except the workers of the industry that is there, you know? And it's like an industrial park.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what it is.
You can't see it.
You know, maybe that's the thing. That maybe those polluters don't want people to see what they might be throwing into the river.
Well, yeah, there's that.
I mean, maybe it's a lot simpler than that from their point of view. Like, you know, they probably dump stuff in around there if there's a lot of industry that they don't want people to know about. I mean, if only the workers go in there,
well,
maybe, you know, I don't know. This is my suspicious brain. I can't figure it out. Like, I can't figure out why Portland has really, it's a rich city. It has the money. It could actually really figure this out pretty quickly. You guys could have a very small population who are without homes. If you really want to.
I think the nuance is in the line that Wheeler said. The nuance and the reason for not wanting the Village of Hope or dealing with houselessness at all is when he said in that quote, and more people will continue to try to come to that village, you know, as if that's, you know, a problem. It's not a problem, first of all. But I look at that as nuance speak for, if Portland corrects its houselessness and helps them, then more houseless people will come to Portland to get help. That's his double speak.
Yeah, but you know what's
and
really...
that's a disgusting framework.
Frankly, you know, that ought to be challenged because a lot of the people that are without houses are brilliant people who have capacities and careers that they're not able to use because they don't have an established home. And that's the reality. I met a homeless guy on the front porch of the post office last week. He was a University of Oregon graduate. And he had been a professor most of his life. Him and his wife broke up 3 years ago. She kicked him out and he didn't know where to go. She got everything. He was completely like a lost little soul. And he didn't figure out where to go. And I sat and talked with him for at least an hour or so. And I kind of, we sat and looked on my cell phone and gave him ideas of where he could go. Because there's, there are stories like that out there. They're not all just like, you know, the issue is people want to say they're all just alcoholics or drug addicts. That's why they're homeless. But that is actually not the reality. I mean, they may end up that way after desperation.
But the thing is, no matter, if you look at any community anywhere, if I look on my street, okay, just on my street, how many people, if I interviewed them, how many people are addicted to alcohol? How many people are addicted
to
other pills? Right. How many people are thieving their companies? How many people have stolen food from, you know, just in one block, right? But we don't talk about that. That's we have to, like, make this perfect scenario of what a good person is out on the street. Oh, well, this person actually had a house once. Or, oh, this person actually had a job. Or, no, this person isn't worthy because, you know, she's a junkie. So she can't be worthy of having a house. And that one's addicted to meth, so she can't be worthy of having a house. Right. And that one has some kids and, you know, how dare she live on the street? The whole thing is we try to stuff everybody into this weird scenario of who's good, who isn't good. Why is somebody good? Why is somebody worth talking to? Why is this person better than that person? When really, on my block, I can guarantee that the addiction in the homes to pharmaceutical drugs is probably pretty damn high. And I live in, you know, in St. John's, where my neighborhood, let's see, I don't know, it's kind of just like middle of the road, you know? It's not like super affluent. It's not super poor. It's right down the middle. And I know that the addictions that exist do exist. I just haven't, you know, I haven't needed to interview people like people feel the need to do with people on the street. How did you get here? You know? And it's like, we're here. They're here. We need to house them all.
Right.
It's cruel and unusual punishment to leave people out on the street. It's cruel and unusual punishment to decide that the parameters for shelter are 32 degrees and the potential of snow, as opposed to it's 33 degrees and it's raining cats and dogs outside. In fact, it's flooding. But you know what? Those don't meet our parameters for making shelters open. Rain in the Pacific Northwest does not make a parameter to have a shelter open.
You mean when it's
because
like rain?
Who cares if people are in the rain? When it's raining, there are no shelters open. Yes. Other than the standard shelters that are open year-round. But like the emergency shelters, nope. They don't open in that because they don't. And you know what they say, Lonnie? They say, well, we can't open the emergency shelters because those don't fit the parameters. It's like, do you get that some human, some guy made that
well, how
a
do you, how do you change getting the parameters? Have they rejected the idea of opening it? Has anybody proposed the idea of opening them during the heavy rains? Like, have anybody?
They won't. So far, they won't do it. I've brought it up, Lonnie. I bring it up at city council. I've written letters. I've talked to Jolin's office. I've talked to the city. I've talked to the county.
Your city Nobody council will member rewrite. Will not. Your city council member won't send in a proposal for that.
They're all our city council members. They're, we don't have like a city council
individuals.
Member. They all are. That's
so. There
part
isn't
of the
a
problem
single
our,
city
our
council
system.
Member. A single city council right. member who will actually write up a proposal
right.
to be more humane.
No, because it's the, that's right. No, and the reason for that is they get to say, Oh, well, that would be something that's in Mark Jolin's office. And Mark Jolin's office would say, oh, let me look into that. I'll get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that game works.
Because well, I think this is exactly why, I think that's why people don't get engaged in government, Mimi. I think this is a not probably a story all across America. If anybody was to go into their local city council and start acting like they wanted to get involved, they're going to be treated like an outsider. That's the issue. You're treated like an outsider.
That's right.
So I mean,
we're going to get, I got to find some Monopoly money today. I'm going to bring that to city council tomorrow.
You're going to bring
all this
Monopoly
money, you know,
money?
The businesses. Yeah.
So is there any accountability on this bond that you guys passed, though? I mean, I'm just asking you logistics on this bill, because I think passing a city bond to help the homeless is a good way that people can, you know, communities across the nation can start addressing like this pretty serious housing issue that we have and that will be increasing. I think it's prudent of us to actually think ahead on this, because I think it will be increasing.
We don't have two things here. We don't have an emergency housing plan, even though we've been in a state of emergency for 2 years. We don't have a plan. No one's decided to write it up. So that money is supposed to be part of, you know, why people said yes to that money, because we need emergency housing. But without an emergency housing plan, we just haven't gotten around to writing it yet. Who's going to be held accountable for this? I mean, the final thing is the county is accountable and the city is accountable. So, you know, the Multnomah County Chairwoman Kafoury and our mayor and our city council, they're all accountable. But what does that mean? There's no oversight for accountability anyway, you know, so people will just ride this out, and that money will keep making interest. And it'll just sit there, and the houseless will die, and they'll drown in the rain, and they'll freeze in snow, and, you know, it's the same thing. But on my end as an activist, I can't, having been doing this, and my friends who have been doing this, you can't just stop doing it, because you know that no one's going to pick it up. Maybe some, you know, other good people might pick it up, but the city's not going to pick it up. So we keep going. I keep going to city council. Other people say, you know, it doesn't do anything. I hear that, you know, but what happens if we don't go, you know?
What do the churches
Where's our responsibility?
I mean, where are the churches? The churches. Where are
the
churches?
Churches are silent. They're silent. Silent, silent, silent. They were silent on the Village of Hope.
Wow.
They've been silent. They don't open. They do not open when we have emergency shelter needs. The churches don't open.
Well, why?
You can't make a church open because it's, look at Christianity. I would say it's not the healthiest of religions, wouldn't you? So, yeah, not that any are.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, but what I'm saying is they get tax-free exempt. They get an exemption from paying any taxes on the money that they generate. Their ministers pay very, very, very little taxes on the money that they live on. And so you would think that, you know, that they could open up emergency shelters for the 4,000 people that are across your city, at least.
Yeah, they're crooks. Everybody's a crook, you know, and everybody wants to do, you know, get somebody else to do it, kick it down the line, And it's true, though, that our churches have not opened. There is a synagogue that opened, and it's remaining open all winter for the first time, and congratulations to them for doing that. Temple Beth Israel over on Gleason, and they are a family shelter. They had extra room because they didn't have the Hebrew school for kids was no longer, you know, a Hebrew school for kids, so they had this room, and one of the rabbis pushed hard to have that space open for families as a shelter for families. And she got it. She got her wish.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so that's one, and it's a synagogue.
Mm-hmm. Well, it takes one to
no
start.
No churches have opened their doors.
You know,
it
just takes one to start. And once they see that they're not having trouble there, that's the reason people don't do it is they all live out of fear. is people are afraid, literally afraid of the homeless. Like, it's very interesting.
Yes, they are. And I absolutely Americans are agree with you.
Totally
yes.
afraid of them. And you'd see them cower even. They look like they shrink away, not from disgust, but really from fear. And so once people get past that, you know, this is all about living fearlessly and enjoying our lives and refusing to be assets on a balance sheet. It's all about mm-hmm. treating each other humanely and looking each other in the eye and, you know, doing what you can do for those people that are in need. Seriously, it is a right. very interesting yeah. thing that happens here, that in the United States, we've gotten accustomed to looking at homeless people on the street like, you know, like mm-hmm. people in India look at these little 4 and 5 year old beggars as, oh, they're just kids on the street begging. But, you know, like, really?
So, no. So, you know, one of the things that you've allowed me to do on your show in the past is to let people know simple things that they can do when they see homeless members of their community in the streets. And that is, you can say hello. It's free. And just say, hi, how you doing? Or just hello. Then you can, next step is you can put some blankets, dry socks, anything that is warming in your car as extras. And if you see people who are in need and you're driving around and you see someone on a corner, you can ask them, hey, you don't have to give money. You can ask them, and this is what I do. I say, hey, I don't have any money, but I've got some dry socks. I've got some blankets. Do you need anything? Do you want anything? And then let them tell you. I've been yelled at in the past as well. So it's not like, you know, you might never get yelled at. But, you know, it's not a big deal. You're not the one suffering out on the street. I've only been yelled at once, just to be clear. Somebody who just wanted money. And that's okay. But there are things that we can all do, and to bring that humanity back that Lonnie's talking about, you know, and saying hello is a great start. You don't need to have lunch with somebody, though that would be awesome. You could just say hi, acknowledge that they are real, that they are actually walking on this street, walking on this earth as you are.
Yeah, and not be afraid of them. That's the issue, is like, just don't, you know, they're not like yeah. some a monster dog or some attack dog that's going to come get you. These are usually just people that really have lost a lot, and that's why they're there. You know, mm-hmm. we can quantify what they've lost, but everyone
it's
has
funny.
Their own level.
It's funny because people are afraid of the houseless people rather than being afraid of the cops, and it's the cops people should really be afraid of because they're the ones who murder thousands of people a year.
Right, especially
thousands
in Portland. Really, it's
mm-hmm.
true.
All over the U.S.
It's true.
Every day a cop murders somebody else, you know, but we choose to be afraid of the houseless who have nothing, who are just trying to survive.
Well, Mimi, I want to thank you for being on our show. I hope you can come back and share with us. Maybe we can make some progress. Maybe people hearing this will put some pressure on the City Council of Portland because we know they have millions of dollars. They just need to go get some housing contracts signed. That's the issue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Well, mm-hmm. look, I really appreciate it. And you can, we'll talk later. Hopefully you can come back. We can talk about No Nukes Northwest and the activities that'll be taking on with that. That would be awesome.
Okay. That'd
and
be great. And thanks
you
for
do
having
have
me,
a,
Lonnie.
You still have Radcast, right? www.radcast.org.
Yeah, Radcast is there. No Nukes Northwest is there online. If people want to hear more about what's going on in the nuclear world of craziness,
go there.
Chime in on No Nukes Northwest.
We'll talk to you guys later. Thanks. Put your courage feet on, you guys.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Mimi.